Welcome to 12 Stomp Program, episode 24, wherein two cranky old guitarists discuss the ups and downs and joys and perils of when the acquisition of musical equipment becomes a pursuit in its own right. I'm Peter Woodward, and my co-host Ron Kretsch is here with me. How are you today, Ron?
I am well.
Aside from the sniffles you were telling me about earlier.
I just hate that sniffles now come with this whole... Now I have to go get home tests and make sure I'm not, you know, plague ridden.
I've been lucky to escape it. My daughter had a similar thing this week, but there was no fever and she was still eating things like a goblin. So I assume she still had taste and smell, and we just kind of let it go. It's gotten more challenging getting these booked now because we can actually do things, and that's what's been strange. Like I got to go to an actual concert a couple weeks ago, and now I'm playing like 3 shows in 6 weeks. It's insane.
I went crazy last night and went to 2 events.
That's
cross-towned it. I haven't done that in forever.
You went across the river?
Yes.
Holy shit. Well,
there was a reading at the Beachland. The 3 authors were Adele Berthe, Lucy Sant, and Mike Decapite, 2 of whom have, you know, major Cleveland connections.
Yeah.
And I actually designed the book that Adele Berthe read from, and I hadn't met her before, so I had to go.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, it was, and she was fabulous. It was really great. Then after that, the Kidney Brothers played, and I didn't care. So I went across town to see Terry Cloth Mother's record release party.
Oh, and yeah, that was last night too.
Village Bicycle killed it. They're great. Some band from Columbus that shares a drummer with Dana, and I don't remember what they were called, but they were completely amazing. Great show.
That's wonderful. Yeah. It'll be a busy couple of weeks playing loud music again, which is, it's surprisingly therapeutic. On that note, why don't we start talking about the tools used to make that
the tools
music?
Yeah, well, we are this is Across the Pond to the Other One.
Yes,
I believe. Yeah, so we are revisiting the topic of international gear acquisition syndrome with Chris Roscoe of Roxo Music, a concern which deals in vintage 80s and 90s Japanese guitars and also deals internationally in new manufacture Kaminari instruments and cables. He served as the guitarist in the popular 90s pop-punk band The Unknown until he was replaced in that capacity by 12 Stomp Program's own Mr. Peter Woodward. So I'm going to sit back today a lot, I think, and let this bro down go down. And thanks, Chris, for making the time to gab with us.
Yeah, no problem, guys. Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
It's super cool. I mean,
Donkey well.
Yeah. Oh, that's so. Just to give people some background, you're from Cleveland, but for the last 20 years, you've spent the most of that in Japan with side trips to Germany and now the Netherlands. So,
yeah,
it's pretty international.
Seems like it.
Getting down to the start of the whole mess, like, you know, when I met you 30-ish years ago, you'd always, I mean, even at the time, you still had all of these weird, oddball Japanese guitars, and it wasn't like you were a crazy collector or anything, but the stuff that you did have was like this Yamaha Super Strat or the Ultraman, like, travel guitar and shit. Mm-hmm. And it was just, like, these very specific and very odd things. Like, now that, you know... Pairing that with you and your brother, Wayne, who also played drums in The Unknown, you guys, I don't think it's unfair to say, had an obsession with Japanese everything, to the point of teaching yourselves the language and, you know, and
marrying Japanese girls. Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
But like, you know, was that when you started playing guitar, which came first, the guitar or the Japanese stuff? Or did they kind of sync up together? Because it's all culminated now in this current venture you have. It's like 20, 30 years later.
Yeah, right.
It's the perfect marriage.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know where to start, but yeah, back in Cleveland, you know, we all were there. We all lived there. We grew up there. We all watched Godzilla movies and Kung Fu and everything like that. And, you know, the Far East, Asia, you know, was pretty cool. My brother and I especially liked it. And yeah, and then started playing music, no relation to Japan at all. I mean, we were into like heavy metal and punk and British punk and then pop punk and all that. So the music, as far as music goes, I mean, it wasn't until the, you know, way after high school that I started listening to Japanese music and interested in Japanese things. So as far as the guitar goes, the Yamaha guitar that I have, I still have it here. It's coming. It's being shipped from Japan.
Oh, God. So it only like take 9 or 10 years at this point.
It's going to take 9 or 10 years. Yeah, right. Exactly. It's just been, yeah, 3 months now. It's coming. It's coming soon. But interesting story about that is I was looking for like kind of a heavy metal type guitar. And, you know, Wayne and I were involved with Nation of Teflon Souls with Greg Weiner and Dave Siegel, the keyboard player. They both worked at Sam's Music out in Middleburg Heights.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. You guys, it's a, yeah, I'm old, man. I know.
No, they used to run the ads in the Friday magazine.
Right, exactly.
I liked Greg a lot. I had no idea you were even in that band. That's
oh, yeah. We were in Nation. Yeah, Wayne and I. Wayne was there, too, on drums. Originally, first, just like The Unknown. Wayne started with drums, and then they got me in the band.
Yeah.
So it's like a pattern. No. Thanks, Wayne, you know, wherever you are.
Right.
So I went over to Sam's to actually buy a keyboard, actually. I bought a synthesizer. And Dave Siegel was the kind of the salesperson there at Sam's and hooked me up with a Korg O1W FD way back in 93 or 92.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And, I was into synthesizer. Before I started guitar, I was a keyboard player, actually, to be honest. I wrote several unknown songs on keyboard, which might sound stupid or crazy. Or,
certainly makes it harder to play. What's this weird animal shit?
Well, then I transposed it all to guitar. But right. But anyway, so we met Dave at the store. He was a salesman. So when I was looking for another guitar, I bought the keyboard from him. It was good. And when I was looking for a guitar, I went back to Sam's, of course, because those guys were there. And,
yeah.
And I was actually, I almost bought a Talon, a Fender Talon. If any guys remember those.
Yeah, they were like the super shredder Fenders. Yeah. Did they? I always get that confused with Hartfield.
It is. It's the same.
It's the same thing. The same.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
It is one and the same. But at that time, it was Fender, actually. Yes.
So it was like, I mean, that was like Fender's answer to the Ibanez Super Shreds.
Yeah. And Kramer's and all that. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And I was looking at that. And then Greg's like, well, there's a similar guitar to those specs over here, the Yamaha. He said, the Yamaha, I can get you a real good deal on that. You know, and I was so poor. We had no money back then.
Right.
And I played it too, and it was similar to this Talon, and it had a reverse headstock though, and the crazy sparkle paint job. So
it's like orange metal flake.
Yeah,
it's like a
sun metal flake sunburst or something. Oof. Right. Yeah. Still got it. So I ended up buying that, you know, because it was a good price. And it was really, you know, I used that guitar in The Unknown for 10 years, you know. And there's not a scratch on it. The paint was like bulletproof. I mean, it's the gear, the parts, the pots never failed. The jack never failed. The switch never failed. I still have it. The original, it's all original stuff.
Like, so
everything still works.
Have any idea? Because again, like, Yamaha instruments are really well regarded. Like, you know, the pianos and the drums and the guitars, but in America, always seen as very niche. You know, it's like, I don't feel like they've ever gotten a ton of traction,
right.
or market share. And honestly, they're kind of unusual to come across. So it's like they've had interesting models, but of that model you got, like, do you have any idea, like, what was it, like, just a mid-level thing, or was that one of their high-end ones that just couldn't get out of the shop, so they're like, here, we'll sell you this thing, like, because it's the great thing about Japanese instruments after, say, like, the, you know, 60s Taisco era, is, like, the quality was always super, super high, even if it was, like, some kind of knockoff, you know, Les Paul copy or something, but, like, always really well built. You still see them now, but, like, is that just part and parcel of, you know, that line that guitar happened to be from?
Yeah, it's the guitar I bought was actually from Yamaha USA, which is, you know, different. It has a different model number, it has a different name, it's different in Japan. The color, the specs were a little bit different for USA market. And I even contacted Yamaha in Japan in Japanese and asked about it, and they said that's an American Yamaha product, so they couldn't give me the specs on it.
Oh, crazy.
So it's interesting. But that line of guitars was really popular in the late 80s and the 90s. And they barely got any traction overseas, but in Japan they're just everywhere. I mean, exactly. But that particular guitar that I have with that particular paint job and the reverse headstock is very, very rare, actually. And is, some people might think, because
it's orange,
because it's horrible, because it doesn't look cool. I mean, I don't know.
Then it comes down, you know, it's your personal preference. I am not into, like, sunburst. I like bursts, but, like, the wood into brown or black is not my thing, and that's really a lot of what's out there, at least when you're talking about American stuff. So, you know, with that being the genesis of it, what has been interesting to me, especially since you started doing some of this resale stuff, is, like, how different it is. I mean, in Japan, with the way the music markets are and the musical instrument markets, but you know, what got you into kind of combing through stores and going, oh, hey, here's this 80s or 90s Fernandez or whatever that is totally rare in America, but there is now a cult following for to break that stuff down.
Right. Well, here's the thing. So, you know, going back to the being poor thing, it's like when you're young and you don't have a lot of cash to buy gear, and we all need it for our bands and our livelihoods, but, you know, there's a lot of guitars, and, you know, you gotta understand, in Japan it was the bubble keizai, the bubble economy was happening in the late 80s, early 90s. And so a lot of Japanese manufacturers made lots of guitar models that were pretty expensive. Because people had a lot of disposable income back then, you know, a lot. And these guitars that were perhaps, you know, $1,000, you know, which is not a lot, mind you, when you talk about a high quality guitar.
If you're talking, I mean, that's well, at this point, that's kind of the starting price point for mid-range Mexican guitars, honestly. Yeah. You know, things being what they are, but it's for that much money you can expect a quality instrument.
Right. So the market was flooded with all these kind of high spec guitars. And we're talking not just Yamaha, we're talking Fernandez, Ibanez, Greco, Tokai.
Right.
You know, and the like, you know.
Well, and then major, like the ESPs and their subsidiaries of Edwards and things like that.
Yeah, right, exactly. All of them. Yeah. And if people don't know, you know, in Japan, ESP has, I think, 6 product lines, actually. So, which is interesting. So most people don't know that. They have grassroots guitars, which are the lowest line.
Are those like, are those electric or are those like acoustic?
Yeah, electric.
Yeah.
We're talking electric. Yeah, I'm just strictly electric here. So the grassroots is their lowest models, the lowest line, made by ESP. Probably made in China or Indonesia now.
Right.
But there's a bottom line affordable guitars, and I'm talking, you know, 300 US, you know, 400 maybe. But then, and then the next level is Edwards.
Right.
So, right. And Edwards starts around 400, 500, and then goes up to even almost $1,000.
Well,
there, US dollar.
So that's one of those interesting things is like Edwards, I don't know if this is their entire line, but they're the ones who produce, you know, the Les Paul copies, you know, or the Gibson copies that you can't sell in the US because of, I mean, well, you can't just, I mean, it's probably illegal to sell it in the U.S. I don't know that people are hunting down for single guitars, but it's the copyright mm-hmm. infringement piece. But it's not like a Chibson thing where it's trying to pass itself off. It's just, this is a single cutaway mahogany fixed neck guitar with the, you know, the angled headstock and two humbuckers, right? But those are supposedly super high quality copies. It's just that you cannot get them here.
Right. And then... That's right. And then the next level up is LTD.
Right.
So that's, you know, everybody knows that in the West. And then ESP, of course, after that. And then E2. The E2s are ESP as well. But
right.
That's also besides that, they also have Navigator guitars. The highest end of ESP.
I've never even heard of those. I haven't heard of either one on the top and bottom end.
Well, no, nobody has unless you live in Japan, and then they're everywhere. So, in Tokyo and Ochinomizu, where it's like guitar heaven, like there's basically a guitar shop just neck row to row. I mean, one after the other.
Like the Denmark Street in London used to be, and the 48th Street in New York used to be. But even then, I think the scale of it in Tokyo is like more massive than, like, you know, those were like one city blocks. You're talking about in New York and London, and then this is like, I've seen the pictures. It's just completely overwhelming.
No, it's outrageous, guys. And there's a shop called Big Boss. Big Boss is the ESP shop in Ochinomizu, and that's where they have not only their store, but they also have their ESP Academy, where they train ESP technicians. You could be a licensed ESP guitar technician. They have their own training to learn how to make guitars. It's outrageous. Yeah, it's really cool. I wish I was 20 years old. I would join the ESP. I would do the ESP Academy. I mean, you know, and actually, a lot of the makers have academies. Fernandez has an academy too. Fernandez guitars. I love them. I have quite a few.
Right.
That was another one that was really big in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, even Kirk Hammett from Metallica played a Fernandez, you know. And Billy Joe Armstrong from Green Day played a Fernandez. So,
I think, I mean, there were a couple models. They had a line probably in the late 90s that did get some, you know, at least some attention, I think. You know, but it's really like... Maybe you can correct this if it's a wrong assumption. This is me armchair quarterbacking it, but it's like there seems to be, on the one hand, there's the stuff that it's just like, these are completely Japanese guitar, like they are just, they're made for J-pop guys. They look crazy. They, you know, weird configurations, funny shapes, weird colors, whatever. But then there is the whole other side of it where it's like, we're going to make recreations of this classic American stuff, you know, like the Tokai Love Rocks and the Edwards, Bernies, Les Pauls and things, you know, those are like, you know, it's that divergent thing, but it's all kind of commingled. Yeah. Like, how did that play out in, like, there's so many questions, really. I'm trying to nail them all down. And I've had a bunch of coffee too. So,
it's no problem. It's just that, these guitar companies have been around, and they've tried everything. They tried, like you said, they tried to make the premium copies of the Gibsons and the Fenders. But then they start making their own designs based off of those. Especially after there's some pressure from Gibson and Fender, and that's exactly why if you talk about Gibson, that's exactly why Orville was started in Japan, which right. is Gibson. But so, in Japan, they're branded as Orville.
Given the limitations of phonetics in Japan, sticking an R and a couple L's into the name of your brand is kind of, that's a dick move.
Right, yeah, it's funny. I know what you're saying. But the Orvilles are, you know, they're pretty much a Les Paul, like a Les Paul.
Right.
I mean, they're really expensive too. The old ones, the vintage ones, are really expensive.
Are they made there, or are they made over here or somewhere else? Like, are those American guitars being sold in Japan, or are they Japanese guitars being built in Japan by Gibson?
It's a good question. I had never owned an Orville. I'm not sure if they're USA and just branded Orville, or if they're Japanese made. You got to remember that there's about half dozen guitar factories in Japan, in Nagano, mm-hmm. actually. That's where all the guitars are made for everywhere.
Right.
And a lot of manufacturers in the early 80s, late 80s and early 90s were, maybe even from the mid 80s, were going to ESP and Matsumoku and Fujigen and Dyna. And they were having the necks and bodies made in Japan from Nagano, because Nagano is famous for their quality wood, tree woods, and different types of woods that they use. And then they were bought by Kramer, for example, or other companies, shipped to America, and then assembled in America.
Well, so Fender Japan? I think they made all their stuff at Fujigen.
Fender Japan right now is Dyna Gaki, so it's Dyna Factory.
But in the 80s, the workers bought the company from CBS or whoever held it, and then while they were ramping up production in the U.S. and trying to get their facilities together, that's when they subcontracted out to Japan and started the Fender Japan line. And so they started bringing those back over, but then left it there. But then they, like, it's so... There's a very few select models at this point that you can actually get that are Fender made in Japan models. Like it's seriously, if they're offering like 100 different models right now, it's probably like 5 that come from Japan.
Yeah.
But they've still had that whole other operation, and it goes back to that like Talon and Hartfield stuff, where it's like these are all there. You know, there are these things that kind of mixed across the pond. But then there's these other things that are like purely specific versus this and versus here and there. And this is, we've kind of been talking guitars, but this doesn't even get into effects. And then the other thing is amps. And this is another one of those things where it's just like, I think we had a similar discussion with Ed. You know, one reasonably nice thing about being in America is you tend to have more space than you need, so you can put some big shit in your space. So getting a big amplifier, getting a few big amplifiers, not really a big deal. Plus, you're going to have a car where you can drive it around, unless you're in a city like, you know, New York or Chicago or something, and relying on public transit that's useful.
Yeah.
You know, so what is the amp situation like in Japan, where space is, you know, at a premium pretty much everywhere?
Right. So in Japan, it's, you're spot on with that. In Japan, there's no way you're going to have a half stack in your house in Japan. It's almost outrageous. It's crazy. There's just no way.
Right.
And actually, you wouldn't even be able to play your guitar loudly in Japan. I mean, and like, you know, there's, Japanese houses, for one, they don't have basements, and they're made out of wood, and your neighbor is literally 10 feet away from you. I mean, there's no yards, there's no basement, there's nowhere to, unless you soundproof your room, there's no way you're going to be able to crank up a half stack in your house in Japan. So with that said, most people buy a little small practice amp, okay, like a little Fender Twin or solid state.
Yeah.
And then they have rehearsal studios. So the rehearsal studio business in Japan is huge. When I was in Tokyo, there was one called Noah, NOAH, and it was, yeah, it was like, I don't know how much it was, an hour. You use your practice at home, you go to the rehearsal studio, and they have, finally, you can play a Marshall, you know?
Right.
And of course, in the music stores, when you're trying a guitar out, you can use a Marshall. They have Marshalls and everything. They sell them. And then if you play a gig in Japan, in Tokyo, then the amps, that's a Marshall on stage. You don't even have to bring an amp, of course. You don't have to bring anything.
They'll just provide backline and, you know.
There's a backline set up with the most expensive, best stuff. So, yeah. So if you're a musician in Japan, J-pop, you know, indies band, you just need to just, yeah, at home, you just have a practice amp or headphones or, you know, computer. Software.
It's hard enough to find good drummers everywhere, but I can only imagine, like, that's not even something where you could be like the one kid in your basement playing the drums. Like, if you're going to learn drums, you would have to be an electronic kid, or you would have to have a dedicated space elsewhere that you could actually go in and play the thing.
Yeah.
That's got to be nuts. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Hence those rolling drum machines, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. And if you're And if you're a trumpet player or something like that, you have to go stay. You have to go to the riverside, you know, or an open field or something. There's no way to, you know, unless you pay money to buy a, you know, to rent a rehearsal room. So there's no way you can practice trumpet in your house. There's no way to crank up a Marshall in your house. There's no way to play a drum set in your house. You have to go. You have to spend money. You have to buy, you know, rent a practice space. So that, it, you know, if you're a guitarist in Japan, you probably don't have a big amp. I mean, actually, if you go to the stores, the secondhand stores, used stores, there's half stacks that are probably dirt cheap compared to everywhere else because nobody wants them.
That's too big. That's what I was just going to ask, if it went either way, because it could be like, this is a completely absurd luxury object. You know, it's just like, oh,
it is.
I'm going to buy this giant, you know, Marshall full stack because I have enough money and enough space that I can do it. So I'm going to be conspicuously consumptive. But then, you know, guy gets married or has a kid or something, or, you know, woman gets married or has a kid, you stop playing music or you whatever. And you then it goes to the pawn shop. Or the youth shop, and then it's completely.
Yeah.
I mean, God, that might be a whole other line, dude. Like, if there's a reasonable way to ship that stuff, what is the voltage on it? Is it the same as U.S.?
Is it 100? It's 100. So America's 110
ish. Yeah.
Japan's 100, and then you got Europe, which is 210 or something ridiculous.
Yeah.
So.
But that's that would be interesting to
have. Yeah, Europe is really. Yeah,
I might have you start looking for stuff, or have your people start looking for stuff.
Yeah,
there's cheap amps to be
had.
There's
cheap amps in Japan. There's cheap amps and there's cheap everything. And I mean, but going back to the 80s and 90s guitars.
Yeah,
these guitars, when you look at the original catalog, when you see the product in the catalog, it's like, you know, $900, $1,000, $1,200. Right, and then you go to the secondhand store or used guitar shop, and they're 200 even for some of these, and it's like, so especially the bubble economy era, you can own a guitar that used to be $1,000, and you can get it for a couple hundred bucks, and yeah, it's like a dream come true. You know, when you get older, you have money. It's like, okay, I could finally buy the guitar I always wanted. Oh, here, it's used for $200.
Yeah, now buy five of them. Like,
yeah, buy five. I went crazy. The one guitar that I there was one model that I liked, and I bought three of them, and because they were like $200 each, you know, and they're in the catalog for like $900, you know, back in 93, 94, 95. So, yeah, it's the problem.
Well, that's the best part about it. I think that would be the sort of thing that, you know, multiple time former guest Stan Simon would be in love with. Just like, this is the perfect deal for a great instrument that's kind of right up his alley,
yeah.
As it is many of ours. Right. But like, has that gotten fucked up with COVID? Like, basically what's happened over here is the used markets have gone fucking insane. Like, it's just stuff that within the last 2 years was maybe $700-$800 is now selling for, you know, $2,000, $3,000. And it doesn't seem to have any basis to it. It's not like the scarcity has really changed. I don't know if it's just that people, you know, they got those the stimulus payments and then snagged up a bunch of stuff and are just trying to flip it or what. But, like, it's still, you know, there's been this this massive raise just kind of in the general level of used prices of stuff. Did that happen in the East that you've seen?
Not like you see, for example, if you look at Reverb.com, you know, Reverb is the, you know, probably, you know, one of the biggest, you know, used, you know, guitar instrument, you know, platforms, started by a guitar, Chicago guitar shop.
Chicago Music
just Exchange.
And then they sold it to Etsy. For a bajillion dollars.
For a bazillion dollars. Right, exactly. There's a similar thing in Japan, like that. And yeah, it's, you can get, I mean, it's nuts. I mean, but here you got to think. You got to think of the population. So in Tokyo, there's 30 million people. And so, and there's a guitar shop on every freaking corner. And in Japanese high schools, they have K-On Club, which is light music. K means light and on means sound, so light sound. So K-On is light music club, which is a band, like band, you know, Western band type thing with drums and bass and keyboards. This is like a high school, after school activity.
Yeah.
And everybody, you know, girls too. There's tons of girls in the K-On clubs. And I was actually, I ran a couple K-On clubs in my high school. Last year, and yeah, half the participants are girls, and they have you know, guitars, basses, drums. It's, you have that whole culture, so you have these teenagers having, and actually the K-On Club was the biggest club in my high school. It was the most, they had the most members and the most budget. So, and it's all based on J-pop, you know, because J-pop still uses lots of guitars. I mean, it's not just, it's not R&B. It's not like in America, where it's just drum machine and bass line and rapper, or, you know, R&B.
Well, also,
you know, Japan is,
like,
starting to get that way, you know.
But with the with the guitar piece being almost of like the kind of 80s metal shreddy thing, still kind of carrying through it, which, you know.
Well, yeah, that's why. Yeah, because, well, Marty Friedman lives in Tokyo, and he promotes that kind of guitar playing, and he's, yeah. He's got his own TV show, you know, Fujiyama, Rock Fujiyama. So, yeah. I mean, Marty Friedman speaks fluent Japanese. He's got his own TV show in Japan where he shreds, and he has guests like Paul Gilbert. And
is it, I mean, is it
King
just
and,
music, or,
you know,
is it just a talk
show?
Like, is it like Ellen, or is it more like Late Night with David Letterman or something?
Well, it's like a music talk. It's a music show. It's a music showcase show.
Okay.
It's Marty Friedman. You know, he's in Tokyo. He's, you know, he's, yeah, he's influences people. There's a girl, a young girl, her name is Lisa X, and she was a junior high school student in Ofuna Chugwako. So Ofuna Junior High School in Kanagawa, and in Kamakura, actually. You know, I worked there. I worked at in Kamakura too, and one of my colleagues actually taught her English, and she is a, you know, protege of Marty Friedman. So
it's crazy,
you know. And yeah, a lot of, you gotta understand, this K-On thing is interesting, because there was a popular animation, Japanese anime, that was called K-On in manga, and it was a girl, it was a high school girls band. That was the whole point of the manga. And
it was like Josie and the Pussycats.
Yeah, something like that, yeah, if you will. And then it stimulated all this guitar playing. So, yeah, the guitar market in Japan is just nuts. I mean, I wish other countries could have more guitar-oriented I know, I mean, here in Europe too, and everybody likes that electronic dance music, the, you know, EDM, and then the Neue Deutsche Hard, the Rammstein, and all those kind of bands that you know have guitar, which is good because that promotes guitar playing, you know.
Right.
Any kind of pop music that has guitar in it is going to promote guitar sales.
And that's a really interesting you know? Thing about it, and maybe why the market has stayed so stimulated and vibrant. Like, you know, it's every other year it'll be like, oh, electric guitar is dead, and then there'll be like a record sales year or something. But like, because the guitar has been in the, you know, the predominant style of pop music in that country, it's never gone out of style. Not necessarily because you wanted to be like Mick Mars or Eddie Van Halen, but because you wanted to be like this pop singer that also shreds. And you know, it's kids now here will say they want to get into GarageBand and start making like beats with loops and synthesizers or whatever. That's great, you know. But to have that be like if you're Kelly Clarkson and you're Christina Aguilera and you're Billie Eilish or whoever, an analog over there also involves guitar playing. That's going to foster that. And the kids are like, oh, I want to do that without necessarily like the other baggage you'd get here. If I'm like a weird punk or I'm going to be in a metal band and be a Hesher or whatever, like it's just there. And then that makes it more widespread because it's. Just the fact that you're like, oh, there's like a guitar shop on every corner or whatever, and all these secondhand shops, like that has dried up so much here. It's come back a little bit, but it's nothing like it used to be.
Yeah. I mean, I was just in Amsterdam just last 2 weeks ago, a week and a half ago, and just going to the guitar shops and, you know, as part of one of my business activities. Mm-hmm. But there are shops that are at the normal chain stores they have with all your full spread of Gibson and Fender and Gretsch and you know,
in the Netherlands, is that part of Thomann's reach, or are they just Germany, or do they kind of head out that way too, or are there other chains out there that you're seeing?
Here's the thing. So Thomann is in Germany, and it's a big one, and also in UK, Thomann UK as well. And also in Cologne, I guess in English you say Cologne.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Music Store Professional, which is pretty huge. It's a pretty big company too, almost like Thomann too. And that's also in Germany. In Netherlands, and Belgium, well, the Benelux area, which is Belgium, Netherlands, and
Luxembourg,
the smaller one.
Luxembourg.
Luxembourg. Thank you.
That Luxembourg has the most amazing gas station attendants I've ever met, because they will just fire off whatever, you know, like, can I help you, in seven different languages until one just clicks and they're like, okay. Just like in Dutch, in German, in French, and then they hit English. Like, oh yeah, I'd like to buy this Diet Coke, please. But so who's the footprint over there?
Well, it's a Belgian chain called Key Music. It's they have, you know, pretty much a lot of the chain. It's the biggest chain in Benelux. Also Bax. There's a chain called Bax. Is in the Netherlands and I think in Belgium, I think. Still looking into it. And then you got the big guys in Germany. As far as these stores go, it's like, you know, you want to start a guitar store, you want to start a music store. And if you just focus on guitars only, then, you know, you have to carry the kind of the big makers.
Right.
But with that said, there's a lot of stores. For example, Saxony Music Store in Amsterdam, really, really old store. I think it started in 1937. They're kind of like done with it. They, I don't, they almost swore off Gibson and Fender, and they're trying to promote other guitar, other brands.
Really?
Yeah. Because, it's just, you know, here's what happens. Guys, if you open a music store right now and you have your Fenders and Gibsons and all that, right? Somebody walks in there, all they're going to do is play it and decide that they want it. And then they're going to go buy it on Coleman or Amazon or, you know, all they're going to do is use your store to actually physically play it.
Right.
Before they buy it somewhere else.
Yeah.
That's what's happening. And it's probably happening around the whole world.
Yeah.
You know, not just in Europe, but any local store, any smaller store, even a smaller chain, that's what's happening. So you're going to go to the small chain. You're going to pretend like you're interested. You're going to, let me play this. You're going to sit there and play it. They're going to give you a coffee. They're going to talk to you. You're going to sit there an hour on the couch. You're going to play the guitar for 30 minutes. And you're going to say thank you, and you're going to leave.
And then buy it on your phone on Reverb. Toman.com.
That's what's happening. And I'm sure that's happening, you know, everywhere.
So what are they moving to from, you know, as the brands they're promoting versus, is it like European only stuff or is it like exclusive Japanese stuff that you can't, you know, I guess that would be the way to do it, is to get stuff that you can't go online and buy except from you as a, you know, a maker.
Exactly. And that's what I'm trying to look into. That's what I'm trying to do. And
with Kaminari?
So, yeah, with Kaminari Guitars, out of Yokohama. They have a beautiful showroom in Chinatown in Yokohama. And they make some nice guitars. Interesting thing is that the Kaminari guitars are all made by Dyna Gaki, which is Fender Japan. Mm-hmm. So they're all made in the same factory. It's kind of like you got a pair of Adidas and you got a pair of Nikes and you got a pair of Buddies, and they're all made in the same factory, but they just have a different label on it, and a different price point. So what Kaminari does is they have a nice agreement with Dyna, and they use some of their production time when production gets, but the last thing they want to do is stop production. So when Fender Japan's demands dwindle for the period or for the quarter, Kaminari steps in and gets that production time.
Oh, cool.
So yeah. Right. So then they could run a production of their guitars with Dyna Factory with the know-how and the, you know, and the craftsmanship is Fender Japan. So they're basically making an original guitar with original designs with the quality of Fender Japan. That's basically what Kaminari is doing. And but they're also looking into finding smaller companies, smaller factories, smaller makers that can collectively build Kaminari guitars for them. So they're trying to get away from Dyna because it backfires on them, because when Fender Japan's needs go up, then they get pushed to the side.
Yeah, they're on hold until the lines open up.
Yeah, because they need Fender Japan pretty much. I'm not going to say this, but maybe I will. They kind of, I own you, man. You know, they kind of, Fender Japan, I mean, Fender's been known to bully even distributors and dealers.
They're the guitar Yakuza, I get it.
They, kind of. I didn't want to say that.
I mean.
Yeah, that's. Yeah, it sounds right, but you know, so and not just Kaminari, there's other makers that use Dyna Factory too.
Mm-hmm.
That can't get production until next year because of the COVID thing and Fender's demands. Now going back to the stores in Europe, the ones I've been to in Netherlands, they do have a few Fender Japans. They have the Boxer series.
Mm-hmm.
They have some of their traditional 60s, the Japanese 60s ones, traditional ones. What else do they have? I haven't seen a lot, actually, of different models, but there is a lot of original guitars made in Japan that are just Japanese market only.
Right.
And they seem, here's the thing. they have so many customers in Japan, they almost don't even care if anybody else wants them.
Right.
Because, you know, I mean, come on. I mean, 30 million people in just Tokyo alone. And that's where most of the musicians are. Osaka as well, in the West. Those are the big music cities. Sendai up north. Those are the probably the three main. Fukuoka maybe in the really far west. But there's enough business in those four cities that they don't even care if the rest of the world doesn't even know about them.
Right. So,
and there's some YouTubers out there. I'm not going to name any names because I don't, you know, I'm not trying to promote anybody or nothing like that. But there are some people that buy Japanese guitars, put them on their YouTube channel, make a review of them, you know, brag about them. They get them from Japan somehow. They probably pay the full price. They probably get a lot, you know, maybe a little discount. Who knows?
But then mark it up. But you're also dealing with shipping.
Mark it up and they They mark them up and resell them on Reverb and in their own website. So that happens a lot because a lot of these guitars are Japanese only. Mm-hmm. And like you said, with the J-pop, there's a lot of the crazy ones you were talking about. Those are signature models. Those are from Japanese J-pop artists.
There was one.
So there's a lot of signature models.
One Fender did. I think it was Silent Sister was a signature model.
Okay.
It was gorgeous. It was gorgeous. I think it had like it the neck was painted white. Like the entire guitar was white. Okay. I forget if it was a Strat or a Tele shape, but it was like completely white with maybe black hardware. But like it was gorgious, and it was one of those ones that was a Japanese only market piece that they did like a limited run over here.
They do share the wealth sometimes. They do have some runs, and they do bring some out. I know Anderton's music in the UK, they get a lot of Japanese, they get batches of weird Japanese guitars once in a while, and they promote them on their channel. I know that for sure. But, you know, in Japan, there's just tons of signature models, and that's the weird thing, because, like, in America, I mean, signature models is kind of like for, like, guitar gods type of status, you know? Have a signature model.
Yeah.
But in Japan, like, you know, a debut J-pop band and the guy's got a signature model already, you know? Like, so
like it's part of the marketing package before the first record even comes out. They're like, "Here's
Exactly. Yeah. Right. And it'd be cool if America did that. I mean, I don't know. And they'd make some of our original guitars out there if I don't know, you know, who knows, you know.
Well,
Japan, because Japan's, yeah.
Is that something, I mean, has there been a trend one way or the other towards more, you know, because here you have, like, everything kind of leans towards traditional, and you've had people on, we've talked about, like, the relics and, like, the recreations and stuff like that, where it's just like, we're going to go straight deep vintage. And then you have the people on the other side like Strandberg and Keisel, and you know they're doing like these crazy heads, you know, headless everything else. Right. But that's a very small, you know, that's niche compared to the people that are like, I want a Strat, I want a Tele, I want a Les Paul, I want a Jazzmaster, whatever.
Right.
Does it lean one way or the other? Or do these two things just like kind of run in parallel?
Well, here's the thing about Japan is that there's a lot of J-pop artists that like vintage looks, that like vintage type guitars, you know, they like that. But on the same token, there's a lot of heavy metal bands and really harder type music, like that love the Floyd Rose and those kind of like ESP type of guitars.
Right.
That, you know, it's something you would see in the late 80s. You know, they're still going strong in America. I mean, like the ESP Horizons and those kind of guitars, you know, it's, you know, it's a big mix, man. I mean, it's, I think both types are popular. I mean, I can sell a guitar with a Floyd Rose in Japan easily. I mean, I just sold an Edwards, heavy metal guitar, and it was a signature model actually. But, you know, Floyd Rose, you know, DiMarzio's, you know, deck, you know, the Floyd Rose DiMarzio angled head, reverse angled headstock, that's still working in Japan. Yeah. That still works, man, you know, and in Scandinavia as well. In Europe, Northern Europe, heavy metal is huge. I mean, right. Glam rock type of stuff. So I don't know about the States. I don't know where you guys are with
it's
glam rock and heavy metal. And
there's bubbling resurgence, I would think. I mean, we all know that Ron loves Floyd Roses.
Yeah.
We lost you, Ron.
Sorry about that. No, yeah, it's an absolutely gorgeous guitar, gorgeous finish. I don't know if you can see the stripe, and our listeners certainly can't.
No.
But this Floyd Rose can eat my entire asshole. I did one string change, lost an afternoon, I'm done.
Yeah.
It's a great guitar. I should just sell it.
Yeah. Just
don't break a string. It's interesting
ever.
Because it
it's a nice guitar.
Just in the last year, I think, in the 2021, like super high end Fender, like the Fender American Pro Ultra Super Performers, whatever it is now, those all have like Floyd Rose. They all have like the Floyd Rose. So it's like you'll have your Telecaster Deluxe, you'll have your Stratocaster Deluxe, or whatever the terminology is now for like this is a production model guitar that starts around $1,700. And then there's the next one up that's like $2,100 that has stainless steel frets and a Floyd Rose, but it's still just, it's regular Telecaster, regular Strat, but it's almost like, you know, they did a reissue of the HM series a couple years ago, you know, where it's like, here's our hot pink, hot blue, and hot yellow metal guitars from the 80s. And
yeah.
I saw
those in the store. Yeah.
But
in Japan too. Yeah.
You know, so there's a couple things about that online market. And this is stuff that I did want to ask you about. Cause if, you know, on the one hand, you go on eBay, you go on Reverb, there are sellers in Japan that are selling things.
Yeah.
So these maybe two separate questions, but they're related. The one thing I'll notice is there will be the same item, whether it's a guitar or an amp or a pedal or whatever, same pictures, same everything. It's being sold by like 10 different sellers and they all have different prices. So it's like, it's not like, oh, this is the same model. It's like, this is the exact same guitar. And my understanding is in one of these secondhand shops, there'll be a guitar hanging on the wall and just random dude will be like, I'll sell it to a guy in America, then go to the store and buy it and then ship it to him and clear my profit off the top without actually having to put money down first. And that's where you get this variance. So it's like someone will have it for a regular price and someone else will be like, I'm going to sell it for $3,000. Let's see what happens. And then you get the guy that comes along and buys it over here.
Yep.
And they just walk down to the store and go, all right, I'll take this. And they, you know, that's a great business model. There's no money out up front.
Yeah.
But is that what they're doing?
It sounds like I already told you about this, but I haven't. And it's interesting that you even said this because I was going to probably mention it. The time's we're getting into the hour, but it's the same thing. I've had actually my guitars for sale on a platform called Metacarty in Japan. They have a Metacarty in America, but it's nothing like the Japan one.
It doesn't have the market share yet. I mean, it's out there, but
right, it's nowhere near what's going on in Tokyo and Japan in general. But same thing. I put, for example, I had a 1987 Fender Strat, kind of like the Inve Malmsteen model, scallop neck, DiMarzio pickups, right? And you know, I had it for sale for like $800-900, and then you look on eBay and there's somebody selling your downloaded the same pictures. Like my guitar, like someone was selling my guitar on eBay, you know? And I took screenshots of it. I actually emailed you. I wrote to eBay and I said, this person is fraudulent because this is my guitar. And these are my pictures and
right.
all that.
Like, did you have to hold up like a picture of you with the newspaper and the guitar?
I didn't have to do anything like that. But I'm just, yeah, it's just, it happens.
Yeah.
I mean, and, you know, stores, local stores selling a guitar and then somebody on Reverb or eBay selling this with the same pictures even.
Yeah.
It's crazy. They don't even own the guitar yet. You're totally right about that.
That's so crazy.
Yeah, it's amazing. So what when that happened to me, it happened a few times, and I pulled down my guitar. I pulled it off. I took the ad off, and paused it basically. And and then a couple of days later, the other person takes theirs off. You know,
I wonder if that's even they're selling. If they're using eBay to do the same thing, where you have the guitar in Japan. They have it up there. Someone buys it from them. They buy it from you. They get it and send it back.
Yeah,
to America.
They buy it from exactly. That person would have bought it from me on Medicali.
Yeah,
and then when I shipped it to him, he would keep it in the original the box that I shipped it in.
He wouldn't even open it. He wouldn't even open it.
He would just relabel it and send it to the person on Reverb or eBay that bought it. Yeah, exactly.
Oh my God.
Totally.
I mean, I would imagine people only do it because it's profitable. So that's just crazy.
Well, here's the thing. Here's the thing. It's like, yeah, I guess the word's out that like Japanese vintage is happening because mind you guys, this kind of phenomena just happened within the last 5 years.
Yeah.
But before that, nobody gave a crap about Japanese vintage. I mean, well, maybe yes and no. I mean, yeah, there's enthusiasts out there. There's a lot of people that love Japanese vintage.
There was a market for those like 70s lawsuit guitars, you know, the Ibanez Les Paul copies or Strat copies and things, but that was still pretty niche.
Right. Exactly. Right. Right. Yeah, the lawsuit models. Yep. We all know them.
So the other side of that I was wondering about then is there also seems to be this smattering of vintage American stuff over there that's then getting sold back here. Now
there's a lot of astronomical
prices, right? But like, what is the market like for like? Is that how is American stuff treated over there? Is it more sought after because it's rarer, or is there just enough volume of it that it doesn't matter? Or I mean, some of this stuff is like really oddball shit, like a Fender 80s Tele Elite, which is one of the ones they did when they had like this proprietary active pickup system and shit and a set neck. You know, things like that are like, you can find them over here rarely and they're not cheap, but there's like five of them in Japan and actually five different ones, not five people reselling someone else's.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of guitars that, you know, you can find really easily. And as far as American guitars, yeah, I've never seen, I mean, I used to go to guitar shows when I was in Cleveland, you know, at the Holiday Inn or, you know, whatever, you know, and I've actually bought it. I bought a Gretsch. I bought one of my guitars that I have now still at one of those shows in Cleveland there, 150th, you know. At the
good old Holiday Inn
at the hotel there off of 480 there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And you walk in there and it's like vintage guitars galore. They're everywhere. But you know, you go to Tokyo in 2003 and it's like, Jesus Christ, every store looks like that. Just normal stores.
Oh my God.
And so like, I was thinking like, oh my God, I mean, how many vintage American, I think it's the same phenomena. I think the same bubble economy had everybody buying tons of American guitars at the same time. So I think a lot of those American guitars were all scooped up by tons of Japanese people in the early in the 80s, mid 80s to mid 90s, probably that period. And they're all in Japan now, and there's tons of American guitars. The prices aren't bad. And actually, it depends, you know. There's some rare guitars that are rare for a reason because nobody wants them and they're not you know, they're not so desirable. But, you know, but then again, I mean, the rarity of it could be valuable if it depends on, you know, if someone thinks it's valuable, then it's valuable.
Right.
You know, let's be honest.
Finding the person who thinks it's valuable.
Exactly.
Is there a big market for new manufacturer American guitars as well? Like, is there a lot of, do you get Fender USA and, you know, Gibson USA stuff over there? Is it really just those brands that are, you know, they're Japanese offshoots?
Yeah. They have new Fender USA, new Gibson. Yeah, they do. I don't know. I think maybe older folks, you know, later in life, in their 50s, 40s, you know, after their, they will buy an American Fender or Tele or Gibson.
You want to play like Slash, you got to get the same guitar. Right.
As far as young people, I would say there's nothing wrong with Fender Japan and ESP, and I mean there's so many good Japanese makers, and I think, you know, I mean, okay, go to Japan and in one day walking around Tokyo, you're probably gonna see maybe two American cars if you're lucky.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And it's because, you know, they're exported, they're expensive, they're foreign, they're, you know,
big.
They don't have a lot of dealerships. They don't have a lot of dealerships, you know.
Yeah.
Their domestic cars are really good. unless you're really wanting it, there's Japanese folks that they want an American car, they want American, they want it, and they buy it, and they spend the money. Same thing with guitars. There are some people that want the American stuff. As far as, for example, Kaminari guitars that I'm working with, the CEO, he loves American stuff, but he's in Japan and he wants to promote Japanese made products.
Yeah.
And what he does is that he uses Japanese parts, you know, Japanese woods, Japanese Goto. He uses Goto products for the for the bridges and pegs, for the tuning machines. But then he uses all American electronics, so the CTS pots, Switchcraft, you know, Orange Drop.
Yeah.
So for the electronics, USA, you know. So I think USA guitars is one thing, but I think there's a big reputation of just USA parts. And pickups as well. I mean, yeah. Duncan, DiMarzio. I mean, a lot of guitars and ESPs, they're all made in Japan, but the pickups are DiMarzio's, you know?
Yeah.
And then Switchcraft, you know? So, I mean, so it's like they're taking Japanese craftsmanship and designs and quality, and then they're giving, because to be honest, guys, you know, the biggest problem with imported guitars from Japan and from the East is, you know, the electronics, the pots, the switches, you know, that's what people don't like about Japanese guitars. In the past, was they have alpha pots, they have the weird inline switch, you know, toggle switch, you know, and inferior electronics. And so I think, you know, what a lot of makers now are doing is they're making the guitars in Japan and then they're putting all American hardware on it.
So. Well, and you still have those companies like Seymour Duncan and DiMarzio that are making all of their stuff here. I mean, you have like the Duncan design lines, which are getting done in, you know, overseas factories for budget instruments, but same design. It's just not being hand wound in a factory in California. You know, so your mileage may vary, but it's trying to find that balance of like value and, or, you know, value and quality, I guess.
Exactly.
Well, yeah. So, I feel like we could go on for, like, this has basically just been guitars. We haven't talked about effects, pedals, like the rack effects market. You sent our friend and bandmate Ken some ADATs.
Your own rack effects episode.
I was just looking last night. I might make a stupid purchase. We'll see. something redundant and not needed, but it's like, ooh. So let's pause the discussion for today and give you a chance to talk about Roxo Music and the guitar line too. Like, what are you doing and how can people find it? And
So
RoxoMusic.com, RoxoSo, I assume being a play on your name, Roscoe.
Of course, yeah. I mean, yeah, why not? I mean, it works. So RoxoMusic.com, it's, you know, it was just started like just, you know, not even 6 months ago. It's a new website. It's a new concept. It's new, not a new concept, but a new business. And we're basically living in Japan, finding all of these excellent guitars, you know, for a pretty good price. Mm-hmm. You know, some aren't really cheap, but when you look at, you know, the potential resale value overseas, it's a pretty good investment. And so what I've done was, you know, I've collected, you know, just, you know, not over the years, but probably in the last, you know, year and a half, 2 years, I've collected about 30 guitars or so that I just happen to like, and, you know, had the aim to try to get people to try to you know, there might be people, and I'm just gonna give it a try. And of course, only used is one thing, but I also, you know, we had the pleasure of connecting with Kaminari Guitars from Yokohama. The company is not new. They've been around for about 10 years making cables, making high quality cables. And everyone's familiar with Mogami cables out of Japan. So it's similar to that. These cables are designed by Kaminari. They're made by Kaminari. They use Neutrik plugs, goals, and high quality plugs. So, yeah, you know, they're comparable to any major high spec type of cable. They started doing that 10 years ago, and 5 years ago they started working on guitars. So it's still in its infancy. They have a few designs. They have a few, maybe three or four solid designs that they manufactured in small batches so far. We have the pleasure of being the you know, the first dealership, actually the distributor for Europe. So if you're in Europe right now and you want a Kaminari guitar, of course you can buy it full price from Japan and have it sent to you. You know, or you can contact RoxoMusic.com and you know, we can hook you up with one, you know, right here in Europe. So that's what we're doing with that. So we're selling the cables and we're selling the guitars, and we just want to promote made in Japan guitar, used and new. And, you know, to be honest, I mean, like, it's hard to sell a guitar that nobody knows about, you know. It really is. I mean, you know, walk into Guitar Center, Pete, with a guitar nobody ever heard of and say, are you interested in carrying this? You know, it's tough, you know?
Yeah.
And it's tough. So, but the thing is that it's made in Japan, and it's got high quality. The parts are amazing. So they're all high quality Japanese and American parts.
Well, I mean, what's the price point retail for these? In Japan and then out of Japan. Granted, you've got, you know, exchange rates and stuff, but.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. So the when we talked to Kaminari about the price points, the pricing was in yen with no, before Roxo Music, there was no even, well, they were thinking about it, but there was no plan to sell, outside of Japan. Of course, the cables, on the other hand, there was a few distributors in the U.S. that were selling them. And, but they're kind of high quality, so you know, not a real cheap cable, so kind of a specialty cable, you know, a boutique type of cable.
Yeah.
But the guitars, you know, they, you know, the thing is about Europe, and I hate it too, is that the VAT, the VAT, you know, the taxes, it's in Netherlands is 21%, so it's a lot. I mean, so if, you know, you're talking like, you know, $300 extra. So if the guitar is $1,200, you're paying $15 over, you know.
And that's before shipping.
Yeah. So that the VAT is a big deal. So the price point is tough because, you know, dealers, you know, stores want to make their, you know, what they can make off of them.
Right.
With a little bit of leeway. But, you know, the consumer, you know, it's tough because in Japan, the sales tax is half of that. So it's tough because, you know, with extra tax, the actual final price of the guitar is a lot more than what Kaminari thought about before. So, but, you know, it's going to work out, and we're getting help. Every time we go talk to folks, we get more advice, and, you know, it's a learning thing, and, you know, yeah, and we're just going to keep going, and we're going to see what happens. And we got a few models, we got a few stores that are interested, and we're going to keep going. It's almost freaking out. It's almost freaking Kaminari guitars out, because if we actually went to Tolman, if we actually went to Music Store Professional, if we actually went to Anderton's in UK, and they ordered
500,
you know, 30, 50 guitars, yeah. You know, 100 guitars. Yeah, the Kaminari company might be in trouble, especially when they're depending on Dynafactory.
Off hours, right?
Off hours, right? Yeah. So this is something that we're all dealing with. By the way, guys, the copper prices are going up again, so cable prices might go up soon too.
Oh,
so
man,
that's another thing. So, you know, those in China, the precious metals. You know, I heard about the microchip shortage and stuff, but
yeah,
it's, yeah, all precious metals are going up for the price. So I think copper is going up. We heard from Kaminari. So even cables prices might go up, but, you know, it's going to be about, you know, 10 more bucks. I don't know. It depends. It might not be that high in the long run.
That's just what we need. You buy another pedal, you need to buy another cable. Now it's all going up. God damn it.
Well, think of this as investment advice instead of, you know, a warning that the cable prices are going up.
Yeah,
does this count as that insider trading? I don't know. I don't know the law.
I mean, so if, you know, other than going to roxomusic.com, can people order guitars through that? Or is it just outreach to you and then you can figure out arrangements depending on where they are?
Right. Well, right now, so... For cables, yeah, you can go to roxomusic.com and order cables. The cables are great. We've had a lot of good feedback. I mean, we even have guys compare 200-euro cables with Kaminari, and wow, you know, there's a big difference. So they're really good. You can order those online on roxo.com now. As far as the guitars, though, like I said, production isn't going to happen again until next year. So we don't even have those available online now. And as far as retail stores that might be interested in carrying them, then a pre-order is actually really important, because then Kaminari can know what to expect. So it's tough.
Yeah.
You know, to get the forecast of what's happening. But yeah. The thing is, it's like, you know, it's funny. It's like you bring some guitars and some cables into the store, and it's funny, to our experience, the guitar players, the staff that work at these stores. By the way, the Dutch guitar. By the way, oh my God! But every store we go to, the staff guys are, well, I mean, probably every country, but Japan as well. But the staff. The staff like the product so much that they're the salesman for the owner.
Yeah.
So we don't even have to even.
Yeah.
Yeah. We just show it to the staff, and then they go to the owner and say, we want these. Yeah, so that's good news. That's good for us. And it's positive. So, yeah.
I mean, well, hopefully I can get my hands on one of these and check them out at some point. So, I don't know. We'll try and get over there or vice versa. So, ROCKSOmusic.com to go check this stuff out. And it's been fantastic
Instagram,
talking
Facebook.
To you, dude. We'll get you on there, too. This is great. I feel like
this has been really fascinating. I've really enjoyed hearing what you had to say about this all. Thank you so much.
We gotta find someone in like South America.
We're gonna have to do this again. Yeah, I mean, and I just got to Europe. I've only been here for 2 months now and doing this, so we're gonna have to do like a second one where down the line, and I'll have more experience in Europe, but. But as far as Japan goes, I didn't even begin to tell you more, but we'll talk about it next time. Yeah, for sure.
Awesome. Yeah. Well,
all right, guys.
Have a great time, Chris, and thanks for listening, everybody. You can get us at 12stompprogram.com. You can email us at 12stompprogram@gmail.com. We're on Facebook at 12stompprogram, Instagram, and Twitter at 12stompprogram. That's all with the number 12, not the word. Have a great week.